What if you found a portal to a parallel universe? What if you could slide into 1,000 different worlds? Where it's the same year, and you're the same person, but everything else is different. And what if you can't find your way home?
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Herzog.
And good evening, I'm Miles P. McLaughlin.
And we're reporting live from the Sci-Fi Diner Studios, I guess you would say, here in Ephrata, Pennsylvania. And M is not with us tonight, not because she's not in Ephrata, because she's working later tonight. And work's important in life. You need that to survive. So she'll be joining us probably on our episode when we record it next Tuesday. But we wanted to bring you a short episode here. We had a chance to interview Miles?
David Gerrold. He is a famous science fiction author, but many people might know him best for his work in Star Trek.
Yeah, which he both loves and hates.
There is definitely a love-hate relationship with Star Trek, yes.
I mean, it's great that he's remembered and known, but he wishes he was known for some other stuff, so...
Exactly.
What was a comment he made in his... You had a chance after we interviewed him to sit down... Oh, by the way, we sat down with him at Farpoint, the latest Farpoint Con. What was it, Farpoint 22 or something like that?
I'm not sure. I've just been using the years to...
Yeah, so what... Mm-hmm. But anyways, he was at the recent Farpoint Con we were at, and you stayed later or the next day and had a chance to see him speak at a panel, and he said something you felt was pretty enlightening.
I actually liked what he said at the end when he closed his panel out. I mean, he said he was grateful for people appreciating what he did with Star Trek and everything, and not just Star Trek, but Babylon 5, just his television writing work. But he said he's written a lot of science fiction novels, and might have been a plug for his books, but he just said, you know what, you all need to read more. People who read more are more empathetic and better people, and... I could see that. I mean, so he kind of gave a plug to all of us to read and more.
Right. I mean, he's certainly done his fair share of Star Trek, so it does not minimize that, obviously. And people know him for that, both for the original series, Next Generation, even the animated series he wrote for. Mm-hmm. Deep Space Nine was involved with that as well. Ed has been known for Land of the Lost, Babylon 5, Sliders, and The Twilight Zone. He's also written scripts for. So, I mean, he's been out there.
Right, and a few years back, he was helping out the folks from Star Trek New Voyages also.
Right.
So, I mean, there's still love for Star Trek.
Right. So, he has written... many different novels. When Harley Was Won was a story of artificial intelligence relationship with his creators. Was nominated for Hugo and Nebula. A Star Wolf series. The Martian Child was turned into a TV movie with John Cusack in 97. I don't think I ever saw that. But Star Wolf series. He did do some Star Trek novels as well. Some of the early Star Trek novels.
Right.
I probably have some of those packed up somewhere. But there's been a lot. He's a very accomplished writer and probably what he wishes he was known more as today. So.
He probably takes maybe a little more pride in his writing projects than maybe in the TV writing, but you gotta be grateful the TV writing, you know, put his name out there. And if you want to see more of him, it might still be on Netflix, but the William Shatner documentary, Trouble on the Bridge. He is featured prominently in that documentary as well, because he was there for the early days of Star Trek TNG.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, anyways, I think without further ado, we're going to share the interview that we had, and it was a great interview. It was about 10 minutes, right?
Right.
About 10-minute interview we had with him, and he was absolutely great.
Funny guy.
Funny guy, mm-hmm. But I know you were a little bit leery about what was going to come out when he said, when he spoke.
If anybody knows much about David Gerrold, you'd understand.
Yeah, I mean, because he says it like it is, or like how he sees it, and it's not ashamed.
There's no filter.
No filter. Mm-hmm. Well, do I have to do any beeping out? I forget. You might hear some phasers or something go off in the middle of this episode.
If you hear a phaser or
just understand that we had to edit it out for family content. We do that sometimes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, I think that's about it. So I hope you enjoy our interview with
Mr. David Gerald.
They seem to be gorged.
Gorged? On my grain? Kirk, I am going to hold you responsible. There must be thousands of them.
Hundreds of thousands. 1,771,561. That's assuming one tribble, multiplying with an average litter of 10, producing a new generation every 12 hours over a period of 3 days.
And that's assuming that they got here 3 days ago.
And allowing for the amount of grain consumed and the volume of the storage compartment.
Your resume is an impressive list of literature and TV series. What was your first foray to science fiction, and what made you decide that you wanted to write your own stories?
Wait a minute, are you kidding me? You do not know that my first sale was the Troubled Tribbles episode of Star Trek?
Well, going back before that.
Okay. My first, the first real science fiction book I read was Robert A. I was 9 years old, and it was Robert A. Heinlein, Juvenile, said Rocket Ship Galileo. I was pronouncing it Rocket Ship Galileo or something. Who knew? I don't know.
That's awesome.
Galileo guy. Had Rocket Ship. And I was reading all the Heinlein juveniles as fast as they came out, which was at that time Rocket Ship Galileo was the only one, and then each year there was a new one. And then one day I said, I wonder if this guy Heinlein ever wrote anything else. And so I went to the card catalog, and which is, you know, kind of...
like the internet for you.
but it's kind of, what's the word? Not presumptuous, not pretentious, pre-something. Anyway, but I went to, it'll come to me tonight. I'll wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, that was the word I was looking for. I went to the card catalog, and there's this whole Heinlein. All right, so I went over. Here's this the whole other science fiction section, 2-3 shelves, not a lot, but here's Heinlein and Asimov and Sturgeon and Clark and Groff Conklin anthologies and Van Vogt. And I'm like, oh, look at this, Henry Kuttner and Murray Leinster. That kept me busy for a while. And then by the time I was in my teens, I had enough pocket money, I was actually buying the paperback books, which were 25, 35 cents, sometimes even 50 cents, it was a big one. And, by the time I was, I guess, about 18 or 19, I was reading not only a book a day, but I had caught up. In those days, there were only 90 science fiction writers. The genre was only 4 or 5 decades old. And you could actually have read everything. You could have read all the episodes, all the issues of Analog and Galaxy and If and Worlds of Tomorrow and FNSF and Venture and Weird and Beyond and all the magazines. You could keep up. Cannot do that today. There are like 20,000 people writing science fiction and self-publishing, and it's just insane. How do you find the good stuff? Because in those days there were librarians and editors and publishers, and you know, Joe Schmuck, who's writing, you know, his Star Trek fan fiction and changing names. I mean, you know, it's like he can shove his book between Dick and Dish, or between Shakespeare and, I don't know, Van Vogt, whatever. Anyway, and you don't know. That's what librarians are good for. Librarians can say, oh, you'll like this. You know? And Amazon reviews are not a good substitute, or even Goodreads are not a great substitute for a good librarian. When Star Trek came along, I said, you know, I know script format and I know science fiction. I bet I could do a script for them. So that's the short version.
For Trouble with Tribbles.
And yes, Trouble with Tribbles, which turned out better than I expected.
Yeah, well, it is one of the most well-known.
It is. And I have, jokingly and seriously mentioned more than once, I said, you know, the night it was aired, I was very... realistic. I said it's only one episode of one TV show, and in 20 years nobody's going to remember it. And the universe said, challenge accepted, David.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's a curse because I have done so much other stuff, as you have mentioned.
Right.
And people go first to The Trouble with Tribbles. Nobody says The Martian Child. Nobody says The War Against the Tor. Nobody says Tales of the Star Wolf. Nobody, you know, it's like, it's always, so talk about The Tribbles. which I don't mind. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, the first Muppet movie, you know, where Dom DeLuise says, and you can make millions of people happy. And Kermit goes, oh, make millions of people happy. I never thought of it. But really, I've made millions of people, billions possibly, of people laugh.
Oh, sure.
So, right. And without going into politics. So that's pretty good.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't need to make people laugh. They can just watch the news and get the laughter right there.
It's like, I do not remember falling down the rabbit hole. I know I did not fall down. But apparently I did. So anyway.
Well, you've done some other television shows as well. And, you know, two of the ones that really interested me were Babylon 5 and Sliders. Huge Sliders fan. They didn't even bring that show back.
Oh, now, Babylon 5, Joe Straczynski, Harlan Ellison came to me and said, why don't you do the Parents Won't Let the Doctor Operate story? And I rolled on the floor screaming and kicking. You know, I don't want to do that story. Everybody does it. And they always save the kid and then... And I said, and after we argued about that,
that was
15
a good episode,
or 20 minutes. And I said, and it suddenly hit me. I said, you know what? Let's kill the kid. The kid is the real victim. Let's kill him. And their eyes lit up. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. So Joe loved the script. And I realized in the writing of it, because there's this scene where the parents realize that kid is going to die. And I'm writing like 2:30, 3:30 in the morning. Because that's the only time when my son was asleep, you know, motionless. And you know, he was at that age where, you know, you're standing over his bed with the pillow in your hands. And no, I'm going to let him live. And, I wrote this scene. The parents are going to say goodbye to their kid. And I realized, this has got to be awful. And I got this chill up my spine. I had to go to the other side of the house, make sure my son was still okay. And I realized, oh, that's why they wanted me to write this script. Harlan doesn't have kids. Joe doesn't have kids. I've got a son who is the age. And I, you know, picked up the phone. It was early in the morning, 2:30 in the morning. I said, now I know why you wanted me to write this script, you son of a bitch. Finished the scene. But, so that was The Believers. I loved working on that one. It actually turned out to be just an exciting challenge and a great show to write for. Because I had to think about each of the alien races, because the parents go to each of them, please help us. Yeah. And each of the aliens turns them down for a different reason. And Kosh gives them this great line, it is too late for the pebbles to vote, the avalanche has already started. Which is one of the most quoted lines from Babylon 5. And the real fun of it is every so often somebody gets into an argument with me on the internet. I can't understand. People go to the internet and argue? And in the middle of the argument, he says, it's too late for the pebbles to vote. The avalanche has already started. I'm looking at things, I can't believe he just did that. Oh, am I going to slice him sideways or lengthwise? Thank you for quoting me. Next time, please give me credit. Guy disappeared from the entire thread. Disappeared from the internet. I think he left the planet. I don't know. Occasionally, the universe gives you a chance to, you know, the perfect squelch. So that was it. But Sliders was another fun one. Mark Scott Zikri, who is one of the best story editors in terms of understanding story structure and what the show needs, Mark Scott Zikri brought me in, and we talked a couple different stories, and I said, you know, I've done a lot of work in the personal effectiveness movement, I didn't say it then, but let's do the one where they find the planet where everybody is happy. I mean, their lives work. And they can't stay there. And it evolved into that there is this special water that glitters. And that if you drink it, it really cures you of everything, you know, whatever ails you. And it also, you know, even your weird prejudices. And everybody's fine and happy. And it's like, you know, lying down to the big green pod or, you know, going through Est, whatever. And everybody's happy. And these people say, no, we have a right to be unhappy. So that was New Gods for Old. Now, interestingly, the same director, Richard Long, directed both of those episodes. So it was good to see him. And he was a great guy. He would always say to me, now, if you have any notes for me, David, Well, the idea of a writer giving notes to the director, I've never been able to do that. But I was so thrilled he would even say that. But I should have paid closer attention, because Richard had this one blind spot on this one emotional thing that I wish he, you know, I wish I had said, Richard, here's how I see this scene. But I never did. He played it very Hollywood, and there were a couple scenes I felt, I really need you to go this over here, that this is real. This is a real thing, not a cult. That was on that one. Which would have made it more poignant.
Right.
But that was fun. They shot that on the Universal back lot, and one of the sets we used was the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas house, which is, you know, and the trams would go by. And it was so funny, because the tourists would be click, 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 and here'd be, you know, a couple of actors, and they'd be busy talking, they'd be ignoring, but, you know, I forget, but the trams would, and I'd wave to the tourists, and they'd click, 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 click. Who was that? Huh? I don't know, the writer. So, but the joke there is, they asked me, is there anybody you want to recommend for this? And my mind went blank. And they said, the next meeting, they said, we're going to cast Stephen Mock. And I said, perfect. Now, I had known Stephen Mock, that's Gabriel Mock's father, for years and years. And I said, I always want to write something for you, Stephen. And I had written the part and forgotten to recommend Stephen Mock, but they cast him anyway. So it was great. So we were up on the hill, and Stephen Mock and I were just having a great time chatting. And I said, I'm so glad I finally got to write something for you. And he's a terrific actor. And he played Max Schmeling in a movie about Joe Louis, and he's been in a lot of stuff. And he's done a recurring character on Suits, which has got to be fun when he and Gabe Mock are playing against each other. So
tell us a little bit about what's going on in the writing world for you right now. Or maybe that's a huge question. We only have a little bit of time here, but.
Okay, well, you can edit, you know, just right. Snip the tape. And
well, we got a signal from the timekeeper here, so.
Oh, piss off.
Okay.
I got to do my job.
Okay. I have a whole bunch of short stories I have started, and I want to have the time to finish, but I've been doing a lot of traveling. And I have book five in my series. Book five in my trilogy is finished, but it needs editing, and that's 2 or 3 months of work. So that's what's up in front of me. Plus, I have a couple ideas for graphic novels that I want to do, and so I have more work in front of me than I have time to do. And I was doing real good with the writing discipline, and then they asked me to be guest of honor at last year's WorldCon, and so along about April or May, getting ready for a WorldCon in August, because there was a lot of stuff. Because I was also the Hugo MC, and we had some books that were printing up special for WorldCon. I have not been able to get back in my writing discipline, and it annoys the hell out of me. Because once I get that engine going, I can do, you know, 2,000 words a day, I can do a novel in a month. So, which I did. One of those books is for sale downstairs. Anyway, but
very good. Very good. Well, thank you so much for sitting down to chat with us. We really do appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Appreciate it. And look forward to seeing more of your work come out. And what website?
Oh, all right. Let me tell you. I do have this you got to put in. I have a bunch of stories that I have sold to the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. And they are coming up. There's one in the current issue called The White Piano. It's a ghost story. And then there's a horror story called The Dunsmuir Horror. And another one called The Further Adventures of Mr. Costello, which is a sequel to a Ted Sturgeon story. And those are coming out this summer. So I really encourage readers to hunt down or subscribe to, or you can Google it, the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, because I've been doing some of my best work, and they've been buying it. And I really want people to. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Where can people that are listening find your work?
On Amazon or Barnes & Noble. But Amazon has some stuff that's available nowhere else.
Because I've
self-published a few stories and collections on Amazon. And there's some fun stuff. I would say look for the most ambitious thing I've done in the past 50 years is called 13, 14, 15 O'Clock. and it's beautiful and heartbreaking and violent and sexy and graphic and heartwarming. And I finished it, I reread it, and it says, man, I wish I could write like this.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Started when I read the news.
Nah.
I read the news today. Oh boy! About a lucky man who made the grade and died. Sorry, I should.
No.
Ding dong, the witches. I can't control myself.
Good.
I would
be a very interesting interview.
I could not be happier if I had seen George W. Bush perp walked in an orange jumpsuit. And who is this interview and why am I doing it?
We're with the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast.
Yeah. The Sci-Fi what podcast?
Diner Podcast.
Diner. What? Sci-Fi Diner.
Yes.
I've never heard of you, I'm sorry.
It's okay, there are a lot of podcasts.
That's okay, there's a lot of people who've never heard of me, so that's fair.
All right, well, you ready to kind of lead away on it?
Sure.
I assume you want me to hold the microphone.
It would be helpful.
You know, sure, you guys. David, hold the microphone.
All right. Go ahead, Miles.
Wait a minute. Who is she and why is she here?
I have no clue.
Betsy. I work with the press people in the interviews.
Okay.
I'm the timer Nazi.
She says,
so.
10 minutes.
Good for you.
Okay. 10 minutes.
She keeps us in line.
But you don't get the uniform, you know, with the hat and the little silver death head.
That's
all right,
closet.
Whatever. Oh, okay. Good. Thank you.
Bring that out on special occasions.
Okay, good. All right. Do your worst.
All right.
It won't be that
interrogation begins.
All right, I'll tell you the plans to the Death Star hidden in the droid. Okay, can I go now?
Yeah. I thought so.
And Rose Blood was a sled.